Hello, and welcome to another between season bonus episode of Origin Story. This one about the reality and myth of the Illuminati and the conspiracy theories it has spawned originally went out to Patreons a few weeks ago. Now we're deciding to share it with all of our listeners. That's one of the advantages you get if you do sign up to back us on Patreon. You get a bonus episode every 2 weeks where we do like a mini topic. You also get each episode of the full season a week early, offers on merchandise and money off live show tickets. And we have a live show coming up at the Phoenix in London on Tuesday, the 7th of May, which I'm very excited about. I think it's our first one in a while. Ian, what is it about?
Look, we've had a very bad idea. And the very bad idea is that we're going to read Nadine Dorris's book. What's it called? The Plot.
The Plot. The Political Plot. Assassination of Boris Johnson.
Right. Is that the actual subtitle?
Yeah.
Okay. So as you can tell, we haven't read the book yet. So we're still quite well-rounded. And at this point, we haven't really started to believe yet in the lizard people. But I am certainly very, very open to the fact that the lizard people assassinated Boris Johnson and we didn't really see it coming. So we're going to read that and we're going to talk about more generally what in the name of Christ is happening to the conservative mind. How is it degrading into this sort of slush of conspiratorial thinking? And complete moral nonsense. So, it's going to be, you know, really a good times had by all.
Anyone who came to the last one where we analysed the shit out of Matt Goodwin's book about the elite.
It's a pretty good idea where this thing's going to go.
Well, no, there is a mixture of analysis and just pure snark. Mm. So hopefully see you there. And if you sign up to back us on Patreon, you will get money off tickets and early access. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to another bonus episode for Patreon backers only of Origin Story. I'm Dorian Linsky.
And my name is Ian Dunt. And in the minis, we don't say what books we've written. No. We don't say any of our professional obligations.
We just assume that
you know who we are.
Burned into your brains. if you're going, who are these people? You're in the wrong place.
And you're sending your money to the wrong account.
Yeah, the wrong account. So we've decided to dig into a topic that came up in a season one episode on conspiracy theories. And back then, we were trying to pack everything into like a one-hour episode rather than doing two parts. So we were really sort of whizzing past things. And some things, I think, are a lot meatier and more interesting. I've been doing some more research recently into conspiracy theories. And the story of the Illuminati, which absolutely fascinates me and is like really sort of like the OG conspiracy theory as we understand them now.
We should say at the beginning, it's not that he's so obsessed that he's just about to talk for half an hour nonstop. It's predominantly that this is one of those episodes where one of us explains something to the
yes.
other. So I have pulled up, I've got a nice cup of tea here. I've got like a dressing gown. Actually, it's a smoking jacket, really, and a cigar. I'm just going to listen to whatever batshit nonsense Dorian has been reading about.
I'm going to tell you a story. We did, like I said, the bare bones in the conspiracy series episode, but there really is like a lot going on. So Ian, what do you understand about the Illuminati?
Nothing really. A conspiracy within a conspiracy inside of the Freemasons. I remember it being raised by Robert Anton Wilson in the book Cosmic Trigger, which I read when I was doing far too many drugs and got obsessed with number 23. I'm aware that there was some of that incredibly tedious religious thriller nonsense with the Tom Hanks with a fucking disastrous haircut.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's me. That's the full extent right. of my knowledge of the subject that you're about
the Illuminati,
to discuss.
There are still people around today. There is I looked it up, and not only is it still around, this website, but it is professionalized. It's called The Vigilant Citizen, and I wrote a piece about it in 2010. And it is a guy who, he has studied, in his own words, Theosophy, Freemasonry, Rosicrucianism, the Bavarian Illuminati, and Western occultism. And he was analysing, and he's still analysing, the symbolism of pop videos and identifying the likes of Lady Gaga as Illuminati puppets.
I see.
And now it actually looks like a professional, like, news, in scare quotes, site.
Okay.
It's still going on 14 years after I wrote a piece about it.
Fuck me. And does it get traffic? Do you know? Do you know how popular
it is? I don't know. Presumably. Someone's going to be. It used to be like a blog. And now it's just like full of, looks more like a kind of generic, almost like right-wing news site. It's just everything is about how, like, you know, Olivia Rodrigo is a Satanist.
I see. Does he have patrons? If he has more patrons than we do, I'm going to get really fucking cross.
Maybe we should pivot.
So the story begins in Bavaria on the 1st of May, 1776, with a 28-year-old Bavarian law professor called Adam Weishaupt, who I find him quite an appealing character. He's a passionate Enlightenment intellectual who believed that the Jesuit authorities, who were very strong in Bavaria, were suppressing knowledge and stifling the potential of humanity. And the way to counter that was to put together a group of outstanding individuals, like Nick Fury, dedicated to promoting freedom, equality, and rationalism. Uh-huh. An Illuminati meant enlightening the understanding by the sun of reason, which will dispel the clouds of superstition and of prejudice. And this would transcend the divisions of class, religion, and national borders.
It's like, at this early stage, I am fully on board with his Bavarian ideas.
So the catch is that because he was so scared, for good reason, of Jesuit surveillance and infiltration, he adopted these sort of clandestine methods of like codes, rituals, secret meetings, handshakes, or whatever. And they became quite culty. And after a couple of years, some of them, I think, including Weishaupt, decided that they were going to infiltrate the Freemasons to recruit some of them to his cause. And the Freemasons are not the same as the Illuminati. They are a whole different thing, but they do get tied up together. And it starts in the 14th century as a guild of English stonemasons and then becomes this sort of fraternity of Enlightenment free thinkers. And the Vatican denounced masonry as they denounced all of these kind of like rationalist secret societies.
I'm a bit embarrassed by this, but I didn't really know that the Freemasons had those kind of ideals in their history.
Yeah.
I just kind of thought it was just some sort of, I don't know really what I thought. It was just some kind of tedious sort of golf club bore, you know, let's dress up and play conspiracy thing.
No,
I didn't think
like
it was enlightenment.
It came out like it was about like sort of making the world better with rationalism. But they, again, they got carried away by like their own mystique. And so they made up this fake history. And they claimed that they were only the latest iteration of these kind of enlightened individuals who were the custodians of ancient secrets that began with the ancient Egyptians, passed down through the Gnostics, the Cathars, the Knights Templar, the Rosicrucians, and finally the Freemasons. Not realizing they'd basically written the enemy's script for them. The people were going to go, oh, right, so this conspiracy's been around for centuries then. And they had all this symbology, initiation rituals, hierarchies, code names, and the paradox here is they're mostly prosperous and sort of quite conservative politically, not in a kind of religious sense. But their enemies spread the theories that they were plotting a revolution. And they explained this by the idea that the conspiracy was so secret that ordinary members didn't know about it. Only the people at the top knew that was the real purpose. So if you asked a Freemason, are you plotting a revolution? They could quite, they would just go ahead and, well, no, well, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And then you could come away going, they don't know. They don't know what I know. So there were loads of secret societies in 18th century Europe, really up until about 1848.
Right, right, right.
And that year of revolutions, and they sort of subsided afterwards.
So they weren't actually particularly special with the Freemasons. It was just that they're the only secret society kind of left in our popular imagination from a period when they were more popular.
They seem to be the biggest.
Okay.
You know, and the most influential. And there was a theory they'd forged a secret alliance with the Illuminati at the Congress of Wilhelmsbad, which, of course, listeners will be very familiar with. And Weishaupt actually was quite annoyed by secret societies. He says, I plan to make use of this human foible for a real and worthy goal for the benefit of people. Mm-hmm. Inevitably, the Bavarian government did not like the Illuminati. In 1785, it banned all secret societies. Weishaupt had to flee Bavaria and live in exile. And he didn't really do anything significant again. Now
I'm not sure he'd done anything significant by the time.
Well,
he fled,
you know,
really.
I disagree. Okay. But no, you're right, because 1787, they're completely defunct. At their peak, it seems that they had at most 2,500 members.
Right.
Like at the very most. So really, there was no reason to talk about them ever again.
But in a way, he does have more patrons than we do. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, so, I mean, it's not like he's achieved nothing.
Yeah, although we're not being persecuted by the Jesuit authorities.
Not yet.
Okay, but unfortunately, 2 years later, 1789, the French Revolution happens. Mm. An unprecedented event. People either think is the best thing ever or the worst thing ever. Everybody's very sort of shocked, particularly once it mutates into the Reign of Terror and the Jacobins, and everything gets very sort of very dark. Now, in reality, there were a handful of genuine Illuminati involved in the revolution, but like very low, not names you would know.
Right.
And there were some quite key revolutionaries like Lafayette and Voltaire, who were Freemasons. And
I didn't know Lafayette was in the Freemasons.
Well, they were converted to the Freemasons by George Washington and Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. who were proper Freemasons. In another twist, the Jacobins outlawed Freemasonry.
Right. No, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Right.
It wasn't a great time to be in a secret society when suspicion and rumour would lead
you,
to your death.
But the Jacobins didn't like you, and the anti-Jacobins didn't like you. So these pamphlets are circulating during the 1790s, identifying the Illuminati as the people behind it. And these pamphlets get expanded into two best-selling books, which accuse the sort of Masonic Illuminati conspiracy of orchestrating the revolution. One is by a French Jesuit priest, Augustine Bowell, who'd been exiled and was living in London. And another was by John Robison, a Scottish physicist and inventor. He was quite a significant figure in science.
Mm-hmm.
And they both use like extensive research into the real Illuminati as the basis for wild claims, which is a very conspiracy theorist thing to do. You don't tend to start from nothing. You start from things that have actually happened.
Yeah.
But it's how you join the dots that makes it a conspiracy theory. So Robeson argued the revolution was part of one great and wicked project fermenting and working all over Europe. And Barrowell said the whole thing had been foreseen, contemplated, contrived, resolved upon, decreed as a prelude to that general revolution, which is to overthrow all thrones, all altars, annihilate all property, efface all law, and end by dissolving all society.
So contrary to my bullshit earlier, actually the main thrust of the sort of suspicion around these groups came from the sort of royalist right rather than the kind of more Jacobin Montagnard left. Right.
Yeah. So they were blamed for the revolution, and there was a multi-century conspiracy, including the Freemasons and the Knights Templar and so on. I didn't really have time to go into the Knights Templar.
It's a shame.
But there's a kind
of... There's no one fucking coming in this room, man. You should just go apeshit.
Okay. Very briefly, Knights Templar, they rose up during the Crusades. They started with like nine people who decided they were going to be like a bodyguard for pilgrims, wealthy pilgrims going to the Holy Land during the Crusades. Then they get established at the Temple in Jerusalem, Temple of Solomon, hence Knights Templar. And then, because they don't have any money, right? So they start getting donations in, and then they kind of work out that a good way to make money would be to look after the assets of wealthy noblemen who were going to fight in the Crusades while they were away. So it's like the sort of an early form of banking. So it is argued, some historians, that they're almost sort of the first multinational corporation. They're kind of cross-founded.
Wow, what the fuck?
So the Catholic Church hates them, obviously. Eventually, and I forget the date here, but like sometime later, like after about two centuries this is, cracks down on them, arrests them, confiscates their assets, destroys them. But they become part of, because they were international, and they had these cool little kind of codes and rituals.
Mm.
They become the sort of earliest, maybe the earliest.
Oh, wow.
Well, no, I mean, you go all the way back to the Gnostics and the Cathars and all that, but they become part of this kind of continuum of people who are a bit sus because they're trying to build connections across borders.
Mm-hmm.
So the Illuminati theory is what we call a systemic conspiracy theory, the one big plot, the theory of everything. And in the paranoid style in American politics, Richard Hofstadter distinguishes this style from theories about like assassinations or terrorist attacks, like event conspiracy theories. Says the distinguishing thing about the paranoid style is not that its exponents see conspiracies or plots here and there in history, but that they regard a vast or gigantic conspiracy as the motive force in historical events. History is a conspiracy set in motion by demonic forces of almost transcendent power.
Mm. Whenever you quote the paranoid style article, you come over just a little bit all a flutter.
Oh, I love it.
I know. Anyone could tell.
I never stop going back to this essay because it's so, it's wrong in a couple of particulars or has been proven wrong by events.
Mm-hmm.
But he still just nails the psychology, particularly of the big conspiracy theory, which is we just call it them, right?
Mm.
They are out to get you, and they change over time.
Mm.
So they're the Masons, they're the Illuminati, they're the Jews, as we will come to.
Mm.
They are the deep state. They are the New World Order, whatever. But it's essentially the same way of thinking, is that all these things are being sort of organized. So there are people that didn't like the revolution, and then there are people that did like the revolution but didn't like what happened next. And they all needed somebody to blame. So they have some really big fans, Robeson and Barrowell. The philosopher Edmund Burke praised Barrowell's scholarship. Huh. Says the whole of the wonderful narrative is supported by documents and proofs with the most juridical regularity and exactness.
Oh, Edmund, that's very disappointing.
Yeah. William Cobbett wrote that Robeson unravels everything that appears mysterious in the progress of the French Revolution. Brilliant. Now, one of the people who really needs this conspiracy theory is the pastor Jedediah Morse, who's the father of Samuel Morse, inventor of the Morse code.
Oh.
And he had supported the French Revolution, and he needed an excuse for what had happened next. Mm. So he hadn't been wrong. He had been hoodwinked by the Illuminati. And at this time in the 1790s, Alexander Hamilton's Federalist Party, famous from the musical Hamilton, was very skeptical of democracy, and they feared that the anti-federalists, like Thomas Jefferson's lot, were sort of planning their own sort of second American Revolution and a reign of terror, and they got quite sort of paranoid. So they got very excited in 1798 when Jedediah Morse delivers these influential sermons which warn of this Illuminati-led international conspiracy to infiltrate institutions and the media, leading up to a Haitian invasion of the US, which would recruit slaves as it marched through the South.
Wow.
So a little bit of racism.
Fuck me.
Entering the picture there. And he said, he held up a hand, he says, I have here in my hand a list of names of Illuminati members in the US government.
He did a full McCarthy.
Like, it's almost as if McCarthy was echoing him, but I don't think McCarthy knew about that.
Is this almost line for line, the...
I have here a piece of paper. Here in my hand.
Wow.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, it's not legit.
No, thank you so much.
He didn't realize. Yeah. The president of Yale at that time gave the whole thing a bit of an apocalyptic spin. He said the Illuminati possess the malice and atheism of the dragon, the cruelty and rapacity of the beast, and the fraud and deceit of the false prophets. They are literally like all the baddies in the book of Revelation. So President George Washington is alerted to this theory, and he says, like, he does not doubt that the doctrine of the Illuminati and the principles of Jacobinism had spread to the US, but there was no need to bring the Freemasons into it. which is amazing. So presumably, like, they shelved the anti-Masonic stuff because they like George Washington.
Right, right, right.
Just temporarily. So Thomas Jefferson, you know, a flawed man, one would say, but in these kind of situations often seems to be the most sensible person. He looked into it and he said that Weishaupt was nothing more than an enthusiastic philanthropist and said that Barrowell's book was the ravings of a bedlamite.
Oh, brilliant.
It's very good.
Bedlamite, fantastic. I really feel that I could get a little bit of usage out of that word.
Bedlamite. because he'd been America's ambassador to France before the French Revolution. So the Federalists said that he belonged to the Illuminati, as did Thomas Paine. Basically, anyone who had been to France was a member of the Illuminati.
Right.
So what happens there is the Federalists go a bit mad with this. And it's somewhat discredited. It really calms down. And what you get then is that American conspiracy theories sort of mutate. It turns back to the Masons. In the 1830s, you get the anti-Masonic party. And there's all kinds of different, you know, different groups and different kinds of paranoia throughout the 19th century. And the Illuminati kind of fade into the background until sort of like the early 20th century. And one historian of the Illuminati, René Le Forestier, wrote in 1914, the shadow of the defunct order became a specter which took on a terrible reality for weak minds.
Mm.
And that is one of the fascinating things about them, is that the Masons continued to exist. And the Masons were genuinely powerful. Like, the anti-Masonic party sprang out of the Masons literally kidnapping and murdering an ex-Mason who was about to write a damning book about them.
Fuck, really?
So there were, like, it wasn't like, you know, the Masons did do some shit.
Mm.
I mean, they weren't the evil rulers of the world. But they did actually exist and have things you could criticize. But the Illuminati ceased to exist in any form whatsoever in 1787.
It's a side point, but do we have much sort of reliable information on the extent of the Freemasons' sort of influence in that period, like on policy, on governments, on...
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a lot of influence, but not in a conspiratorial sense. It wasn't like it was all agreed by the Freemasons, but it seeped in. For example, the Freemasons were into certain symbolisms like pyramids and eyes. And so the seal of the US, which ends up on the banknote, but not till the 1930s, you know, the pyramid and the eye, yeah, that's Masonic sort of symbology, but it doesn't mean that the Masons are running things. There were some founding fathers, some presidents were Masons, some weren't. Mm. It's only sort of influential, but in not in a kind of secret way. That was the thing. So people continue to obsess about Masonic conspiracy theories, but we always know too much about the Masons. Mm. Whereas the Illuminati, because they no longer exist, like, can be anything. So people may remember from the conspiracy theories episode, early 20th century, you get the emergence of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, this famous anti-Semitic hoax, which essentially recasts this one big plot, but now it's the Jews basically doing what the Illuminati did. It's the same idea, it's just you've changed the identity of them.
And were they conscious of that? Just that they're literally just putting a new sort of wallpaper over the existing storyline?
Well, they weren't taking it directly from the Illuminati. They were piecing it together from different things. But it was interesting that a few years after Barrowell published his book, this guy wrote to him and went, oh, you know, it's actually the Jews. And Barrowell, really kind of weirdly, he went off and wrote a manuscript about how maybe it was just the Jews all along. Huh. But then he thought if he published it, it would cause pogroms. And so he never published it.
Oh, wow.
But he sort of set it up. And the historian Norman Cohn says, in its modern form, the myth of the Jewish world conspiracy can be traced back to Barrowell.
Oh, so that manuscript that he wrote out did eventually get distributed. He just
Distributed, or it was certainly like known about. I mean, I don't think you can say that Barrowell popularized it, but he certainly was aware. He certainly made a possible connection.
Incredible.
So it's, when you're talking about ways of thinking, it's not necessarily like there's a direct influence.
People have
read the Illuminati, and the Illuminati don't figure in the books that the Protocols plagiarized, but the Protocols inspire a series of articles about the world conspiracy in the British newspaper The Morning Post in 1920. And they published in book form as The Cause of World Unrest, anonymously. The author was an upper-class British woman, Nesta Webster, who was a member of Mosley's British Union of Fascists and the forerunner, the first British fascists, the ones that didn't really make any impact at all. She published several books about secret societies and plots for world revolution, Jews, Masons, communists, and the Illuminati. Hmm. And she is the one that people keep referencing. That is the kind of revival of the Illuminati. So then you get lots of American fascist movements in the 1930s, and people like Father Coughlin, groups like the Silver Shirts, folded together these different theories. So Coughlin actually said that Weishaupt had invented communism, which he had not.
No.
The John Birch Society reprinted Robeson's book and Webster's book and said that the socialist choice of the 1st of May as the International Workers' Day was a recognition of the founding of the Illuminati.
This story is absolutely fascinating.
Which is not, but it's a coincidence.
It's just mad. Which is just covered. It's sort of the period that it goes through and the regularity of the sort of the thought process, how closely it mimics it. It's just quite sketchy hearing a story that starts in Bavaria sort of years ago, and then suddenly you're being presented with narratives that you know very, very well indeed from your day-to-day life that exactly mimic the kind of stuff that was being said then.
But they disagree. Some of them disagree. There's an amazing a guy called William Guy Carr who wrote The Red Fog Over America in 1955, obviously an anti-communist, but not an anti-Semite. And he said that people should stop talking about the Jews because that plays right into the hands of the Illuminati. So it's not always an anti-Semitic dog whistle.
That was like the really moderate centrist version of this.
It's just what the Illuminati want. So it's sort of bubbling away on the radical right in America. And then it gets revived again in a completely different form, basically as a joke. So you mentioned Robert Anton Wilson there earlier. So you have a friend called Robert Shea. They used to kind of edit the letters page on Playboy. And they used to get lots of crazy letters. that they didn't publish about like conspiracy theories. So they, in 1975, they published the Illuminatus trilogy, which is a kind of a postmodern parody of conspiracy theories involving all kinds of like Nazis and Atlantis and JFK and everything. And Wilson invented a project he called Operation Mindfuck to pin all national calamities, assassinations or conspiracies on the Illuminati so as to sow the culture with paranoia. But it's a kind of like countercultural prank. But of course, lots of people take it seriously.
Right.
Lots of conspiracy theories actually come out of novels. And in fact, part of the Protocols of Elders of Zion was plagiarized from a novel.
Two novels.
So the fiction and reality just keep going back and forth. And sometimes people don't know. In the same way that a lot of people think that the Da Vinci Code is just like, is totally legit. When in fact it's based on like total crank history, but it presents itself as like, oh, it's did you know? You know? So it's sort of, there is this slushiness between reality and fiction. So you get The New World Order by Pat Robertson, the US evangelist and presidential candidate in 1991, Illuminati and the Freemasons, satanic, totalitarian, one world government, and so on. Jim Mars, who wrote one of the books that Oliver Stone's JFK was based on, wrote another book about the Illuminati, about slightly undermining his credibility on the JFK front. David Icke claimed that the Illuminati were descended from the extraterrestrial reptilians, the Anunnaki, who sacrificed children and drank their blood.
Right. Does he, just out of interest on that, did he invent the name the Anunnaki?
I actually don't know.
No.
I have to be honest on that.
Well, I really feel you've let me down. I've got a question on general knowledge now.
I didn't go super deep into Icke world.
Shame.
On this. But he of course brings it up, and he was perhaps like the most successful conspiracy theorist of the 90s.
Huh, yeah.
Really, when you think about it, before the rise of Alex Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the one sort of disseminating this stuff. And it gets into hip hop. It's in loads of hip hop lyrics, you know, the Tupac album Don Columinati. And then rappers started accusing each other of being Illuminati. So Jay-Z had to deny being an Illuminatus. And it's not one of his best lyrics, but he raps, "I said I was amazing, not that I'm a Mason." But it's weird to have Jay-Z have to deny on a record that he's a Freemason.
Yeah.
Like... That does tell you something, that he felt moved to do that. So it kind of swims around, and some people take it seriously, and some people go, well, it's only metaphorical. Some people use it basically for anti-Semitism. And some people think it's just a bit of fun. And it's, as usual with this stuff, particularly these days, it's very hard to tell, like, who's for real? Like, who's sort of pulling your leg? Who's a bigot?
Yeah.
Who's a clinical paranoiac? But the Illuminati have been, they are sort of still with us. Not literally, they don't exist. But the idea of it does. And I think that the reason why it does is it is a theory, and it's maybe the first version of a theory about how the world works. And so it's all about sinister individuals, not systems. It's about plans, not accidents or unintended consequences. It is a sense that everything must have happened for a reason. And that's what they were saying about the French Revolution. Why are you so upset that, you know, it's gone this way, with it's headed for the guillotine? And you go, oh, because these evil secret guys did it. And that's kind of the root of all of these conspiracy theories. And that Gary Allen of the John Birch Society, a believer in the Illuminati, among other things, an amazing character who decided, my favorite Gary Allen fact is that, you know, the Beatles' music, when they stopped touring, became much more sophisticated, you know, with like Revolver and Sgt. Pepper and so on. And Gary Allen said, well, the only reason they could do this is if they had funding from, you know, from, it's like, I can remember this from the CIA or the Soviets. It wasn't just because they spent more time in the studio with George Martin. It had to be a conspiracy that would explain Story Feels Forever. So he went, politicians and intellectuals, he puts intellectuals in scare quotes, are attracted to the concept that events are propelled by some mysterious tide of history or happen by accident. And he then proceeds to mock the accidental view of major world events and defend the conspiracist view.
Oh, wow.
He says it's just silly to think that things like just happen. They're obviously being done by the communists slash Masons slash Illuminati.
Oh, it's so good of him to set himself up as a prime example of the kind of psychological defects that we talk about
right.
when we discuss conspiracy
theory. Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And it. But it's so fascinating the way that he's just sort of sneering.
Yeah.
I think what I would say probably the consensus view of history is yeah. that there are quite right. a lot of, you know, loose threads and mistakes and so on. And I'm going to end on a really good line from the French writer Hilaire Belloc. And he read one of Nesta Webster's books. And he was quite prejudiced himself. So it wasn't that that bothered him. But he complained to a friend about the conspiracist mindset. He says, there is a type of unstable mind which cannot rest without morbid imaginings, and the conception of a single cause simplifies thought. With this good woman, it is the Jews. With some people, it is the Jesuits. With others, Freemasons, and so on. The world is more complex than that.
Yes. I mean, I like the way that you've ended on a line that basically summarizes our entire podcast. But yeah, there's the, yeah.
That's why we're, I suppose that's why I'm obsessed with conspiracy theories, because they are a view of history and how the world works. It is a total belief system and a relationship to knowledge and events, and one that is really alien to me.
It's funny, because we were mentioning it when we were talking on the patron Zoom thing about, you know, what is there to see in the appeal of sort of fascist leaders or authoritarian leaders? And it's that thing of like, oh, I don't have to think about the complexity anymore. I can just hand it over to the strongman. Conspiracy theories are basically the same in narrative form. You know, they might not have a strongman, although they often lead to a strongman.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just basically going, okay, I don't have to worry about any of the complexity, the systems, the accidents, the impossible impenetrability of all the stuff that goes on in the world.
Yeah.
I just have to go, oh, just a bunch of bastards over there in a special secret society. They just sorted it all out between them. And that's really quite a satisfying story, and most importantly, it means that you get to stop thinking, which is what a lot of people want to do.
And there's always a them.
Yeah,
it just sort of changes constantly. Like whoever you dislike, whoever you sort of blame for your misfortunes or the misfortunes of your political faction, it's not because you failed. It's because of them. And there are, like, you know, as I think we discussed before, I think there are kind of more moderate versions of that in politics. You get it in Nadine Dorris's book, The Plot.
Mm.
You get it. You got some of that in Corbynism. They were out to get him, and that's the only reason. And that means
totally, 100%.
You don't even have to talk about Corbyn's sort of weaknesses as a politician, or perhaps why he was not beloved by the, you know, British public. You can just go, well, they were out to get him.
Mm.
And the Illuminati is not the first conspiracy theory, because you can talk about conspiracy theories about Jews going back to the Crusades. You've got witch hysteria is a conspiracy theory. Again, you're blaming an evil coven for everything that's making you miserable. But this was the first one where they kind of really, like, established this idea of the organized secret international network. Which, you know, people didn't have that with witches.
It's also fascinating that it comes up so tightly wound around the Enlightenment.
Mm,
you know, that thing I said to you of like, well, that sounds great to me. Well, actually, it's like, no, hang on a minute. That symmetry seems quite important, right? Because the conspiracy theory is essentially a complete rejection of the Enlightenment worldview of empiricism rationality. And so by virtue of that, it can only be once the Enlightenment happens that we can really talk about fully formed conspiracy theories. So it's much harder with stuff like witch hunts because it's in a completely alien mindset of a completely different way of thinking about the world. Here it's modernity, and therefore it starts demonstrating modern psychological flaws.
And I just hadn't realized until I was thinking about this. I was thinking, Weishaupt really was a kind of, you know, this idealist, you know, really harmless. Like, he didn't seem to have done any harm whatsoever. And it was so weird that it's the Illuminati that get picked up as, like, a fairly sort of benign, if kind of a little bit sort of kooky group that get held up. And then I thought, but look at the Great Reset, Agenda 21, these things that conspiracy theorists obsess over. And if you actually look at what the UN meant, Agenda 21 was, again, just this kind of like, we should just get people together. You know, the Bilderberg group. It's just like, well, what if we could just got different people together around the world to discuss the world's problems? So like the things that conspiracy theorists most obsess over are often kind of like international liberal networks and talking shops and, you know, programs for like, how can we make the world better? Now, I'm not saying that like there aren't things to criticize about those people, but I thought, oh, this does go all the way back to the Illuminati. It's that dissonance between the expressed aims and the alleged aims is kind of central.
I love this idea that there's a story that goes on for hundreds of years about a group that almost at no point existed, with hardly any people in it for a tiny period of time. And then there's just centuries of people losing their shit over them, over basically an empty room, over just something that is not there.
Well, I can't get into the Rosicrucians, but there's a big mania in the 17th century about the Rosicrucians.
As a quote of yours, I can't get into the Rosicrucians.
A lot of historians think that the Rosicrucians, at the point at which people were going crazy about them in the 17th century, did not exist, and the documents about them were complete hoaxes. And that later some people called themselves Rosicrucians because of this mythology that built up around them. But to start with, they literally didn't exist at all.
Yeah. Look, I've stopped listening to you. All I've got is the fact that we are going to make merch that has coffee cups that say, I can't get into the Rosicrucians. I'm sorry, but I've latched onto that and it's impossible for me to think about anything else.
I got a bit carried away. This whole area is fascinating because once you know about it, you start seeing it everywhere, not in a conspiracy theorist way, but like you just realize every time the word like Illuminati, pops up and New World Order and all those things, and you think, oh my, the staying power of these phrases is remarkable.
Mm. Well, let's wrap it up. I, for one, am bitterly disappointed that you didn't really do your research on the lizard people. And I expect next time that we sit down to get a full briefing on what's going on with the Uranopods, or whatever the fuck they're called. Guys, we'll be back in a fortnight for another little patron-only mini-cast. Do take care of yourselves in the meantime. See you then.
Thanks, everyone.